Hello there, and welcome to this episode 4 of our glorious podcast. Today we're going to be speaking to another one of our lovely poets from our growing collection. His name is Richard Marsh, and he's going to start speaking anytime soon. Say hello to everybody.
Hello, everybody.
Yes, I love it how it feels like I'm not just in a room by myself when people do that.
I'm not here.
It's just me putting on a different voice. Too hard. Look, we're recording the podcast in the female voice zone, so I don't know if this is going to affect you.
What are you trying to say, Sam? I think of myself as a fairly butch individual, as poets go.
No one's ever going to know.
That's true.
Unless they go and see you afterwards, which we're going to try and encourage. Anyway, so to begin, I'd like you to read. I'd like you to recite something for me, please. What would you like to begin with?
I'm going to start with a poem that is called, sort of slightly reluctantly, because I never really have titles, but I call it Consolation. Okay. There's a girl in a corner of the pub crying. Now when I cry, I look like a wet Where's Wally. When Jen cries, she's more beautiful than a dry Where's Wally. Her friend defends Jen. She says, just because she's tearing up, she don't need you cheering up. It's men who make the messes and us girls do the clearing up. But though two wrongs won't make a right of it, it seems two wronged ones can make a night of it. Salt and vinegar kiss on lips. The bus stop smells of piss and chips. She sways to her CDs, shaking her hips. Can't find the one she wants, and when she does, it skips. At last she gets a tune in. I start to feel the room spin. How long till we'll be spooning? Because that's why I'm here. Well, that and a beer. And my life's been directed by Lars von Trier. But it all goes wrong when she comes near. We're clashing teeth and scratching bums, two boozy bags of elbows and thumbs. I'm lying on her hair, and she wants her knee there. And wait a second, she's touching me where? Do people do that now? It's a complete disaster. I'm absolutely rubbish. She says, Rich, it's nice, you're enthusiastic, but I've got to be honest, you fuck like a spastic. You sure we should even go ahead with this? I'm like, yeah, Jen, yeah, we should. No one ever died wishing they'd had less sex. And Jen says, unless they died of AIDS. For a year, I've gone to bed, holding a pillow in my ex's stead. I say, you're better than a pillow, Jen. She says, you weren't lying about being a poet then. And from that faceless, fucked up muddle, we find what we need more than all of that, a cuddle. And messing becomes holding, becomes pressing, becomes scolding, becomes assessing, becomes unfolding, becomes undressing, becomes beholding, becomes caressing, blessing, possessing, gold in a flat in London town. And where every heart in the world beating, and every old friend in the world meeting, where every trick in the world treating, and every mouth in the world eating, where every fire in the world burning, and every alone in the world yearning, where every child in the world learning, and every world in the universe turning, where bees and flowers, days and hours, superheroes gaining powers, with Michelangelo's chisel, with Snoop Dogg's shizzle, with the first fish crawling on the land, with a mic gripped tight in Tom Waits' hand, we're dressed up and nudie, we're Richard and Judy, we're all we can be, we're he and she, and then back to the start, we're every beat of every heart. And when all that is through, the me and the you, in the dew of our goo, we could do with a brew. And tonight, those well-stewed PG tips, the first thing's PG past our lips. She blows steam off the top and she says, you've been so kind being him for me that I'll be her for you. And it may not be quite perfect, because it may not be quite true. But the morning sun will warm us now the night's pretending's through. You've been so kind being him for me that I'll be her for you. And 30 years later, in another bed, in another room, with a balding head, she's not the girl to whom I fled. She's now the girl to whom I'm wed.
Thank you very much. I was going to say something, and that was, oh yes, so, to me that was like a very much a performance piece. Do you write your poems to perform specifically, or do you write them just because, and then kind of make them readable?
All the ones I've written with a view to performing them, yeah. I started off doing poetry in December last year. I did they have at the Battersea Arts Centre, they have what they call scratch nights, where you can sort of send in a proposal, and if they sort of select it, they will let you perform a kind of a 10-15 minute piece. And I did a little sort of piece that was a kind of a bit of theatre, a bit of maybe stand-up storytelling, and some rhyme as well. And they let me put it on, and people laughed, or I hoped they would laugh, and they didn't walk out, which would be quite rude, it was quite short, but it didn't walk out. And at the end, they gave me a few tips on and said, you know, you should try going to some of these spoken word nights. And that's how I sort of got into this whole thing. And I was also very lucky that a really good poet called Chris Redmond, or Ventriloquist, he's also known, was there, and he watched my piece, and he sort of was very kind and said, oh, look, try going to this gig or that gig or whatever. And that's how I started it. But I didn't really start off writing poems. I started off writing this piece, and then that was performed. And then, I don't know, like, maybe if they'd said, no, we're not going to put your piece on, I don't know if I'd be doing this, because I didn't really know that there was performance poetry, really. I was sort of quite clueless in that respect, you know. But luckily enough, people pointed out, go there, there's people with a microphone doing poems, and that's how I began. Yeah,
it's interesting, because I remember looking at yours on the page, and they're completely different. As I keep saying to people, and I shouldn't, I don't like rhymes, but oh. I think that actually thinking about it now, when people perform poetry, yeah. Obviously that makes it work. I think I just don't read poems properly. So when I'm reading them, the rhymes don't, they just sound, they kind of make me cringe a bit. But when people are performing them, they sound absolutely fine. They sound like yeah. they should be there. But it's completely, it's totally different. Mm. Which totally from where I was going with this.
It's the rhythm of it as well, though, isn't it?
Yeah,
when you're performing it as well, that's also.
But I think, unless you just use really bad punctuation, but I don't read your poems the way that you perform. I'm joking. I don't read them. Obviously, but that's why I love it, is that especially if you see something and then you actually hear someone
doing
it. It's totally.
Yeah.
It is different, but I much prefer, I guess, hearing them
in the
poet's actual voice.
It's an interesting point, actually, because I'm quite reluctant to give. To send people like a Word document of my poems. I'd rather, like, I remember when you asked them, I sent you a sound file, didn't I?
Yeah.
Off my phone. And you said, no. I don't want the words.
And it's just because, I think I like to, I suppose, I love listening, but my memory is terrible. And I can't remember anything or follow. So if I wanted to ask, you know, I can't sort of study a poem that way. Mm. But maybe, you know, the things, some performance stuff isn't designed to be read at all or studied. It doesn't stand up to that. That's not necessarily the case with you or people I meet, but sometimes the people they do stuff to perform that is almost, it's almost like stand-up comedy or something, and it's the way they act, they're acting so much that that's what makes it, rather than the words themselves. But yeah, well, everyone, again, this was the same with Katie, and I think it's the same with you. People miss out when listening, because you've got all the gestures and stuff as well as you're doing it.
Oh, yeah,
which I love
yeah.
that you still do, even though no one can see you except me. But yeah, I don't know, I think they're missing out. It's a shame. But yeah, so how often do you perform? Are you kind of making it like a consistent thing, or?
I'm doing it quite a lot at the moment. It depends sort of what else I'm writing, because I also write plays as well, and that's what I've been doing much longer than poetry. And I work at this theatre 503 in Battersea, which is a brilliant theatre, and they've got some writers which are on an attachment there. One of them is me, and so sort of I did my first poem in kind of, I think, December last year, but then had to do a draft of my play for the theatre, so then I pretty much didn't do any for like 2 months, because I was just busy typing on my own, doing voices, walking around my bedroom, drinking too much coffee, trying not to take up smoking again. And I find it quite sort of, initially I found it quite hard, because it's so different, because performance poetry anyway is your, I guess, me anyway, I'm writing it for me to do it. And as you say, like, part of it is, it's me, it's this bloke with glasses and sort of curly hair walking on, and then kind of, you know what, it's very different if I do a joke about, if I do an AIDS joke, it's very different for if someone like with a, you know, a guy with a shaved head comes on and does an AIDS joke. It has a different effect, right, I would imagine. So yeah, how much I perform depends a lot on if I've got a draft to do of a play or something else like that, you know, yeah. So at the moment I may be going twice a week, I guess. So yeah,
it's pretty impressive.
I really enjoy it, you know. it's quite addictive as well.
I suppose my other nosy question that I always ask people is, like, what, how do you write, like, quite literally, how do you approach it? Do you enjoy writing or not? This is what I asked Pauline before, because mm-hmm. some people don't, I don't, but you know, it's got to be done.
I do, I love it. It depends which stage. I start off with either having an idea or having a feeling that I want to express, or sometimes that, or sometimes just some rhymes pop into my head, or a rhythm pops into my head, or kind of a character pops into my head, and then I just want to write stuff down, and I'll scribble that down wherever I am. It could be on the tube, or sort of on the bus, or at work, or wherever, and I just sort of constantly have these little bits of sort of folded up paper with stuff scribbled on it, you know, and then hopefully I can read it later on. Quite often I can't read it, and so things get abandoned because, I don't know, I've forgotten how to write. The skills that a 10-year-old child has, I no longer possess. But, and I'll sort of scribble down at the beginning. I don't really worry about it making any sense or order. I just come out with sort of all the ideas I can come out with on that sort of subject. I scribble down. And then later I kind of type them all up and start to sort of make them in some kind of order or work out maybe. Most of my poems tend to have a story to them as well, and work out what that story will be, and then where I come into the story, and if there's like a twist at the end or some surprises along the way, you know, stuff which people hopefully aren't going to expect. And I think maybe part of that is because as my day job, I'm an editor, I edit tele programs, and so I'm quite used to kind of, if you're doing a documentary, sort of taking sprawling bits of morsels of life that have been caught on camera and trying to make them into a coherent story. And I guess I haven't consciously done this, but I think looking back at it, this, what I do is I try and create as much sort of material and rhyme and jokes and colourful moments as I can, and then somehow sort of shape that into, I'm doing a gesture a bit like a Blue Peter presenter with some sort of quite bad papier-mâché.
He's squashing a puppy in between his hands.
Yeah, an invisible squashing a puppy. The puppy's enjoying it though. A bit too much. Yeah, that's how I sort of write.
It's silence puppies. More than anything.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
So, like, when you've got an idea, do you kind of stay with it until you feel it's kind of not finished, polished, finished, but you've got like a hole? Or do you kind of come back to it and let the scraps kind of find their way towards each other kind of over time?
I normally want to sort of keep going with it. I'm normally really excited about it and I want to sort of crack on with it, yeah. So, I'm always on the tube or whatever. I've always got my, you know, I type it all out and I print it off and then I scribble all over it. And then when I get home, I type it up again and I scribble all over it. And yeah, I'm always kind of, squashing that puppy until finally, you know, it's ready for crafts. But yeah, I've had one recently where sort of this poem became sort of two different ones. And then they're now kind of both separate. And I just realised I'd written this bit at the end, which I really liked, but just didn't really fit with the beginning. So I've kind of ripped it out of the other one and essentially I've taken the puppy's spine and I'm trying to build a new creature from it, which is actually turning out all right. I quite like the puppy spine poem, so we'll see how it
goes. I want you to give that can be its like secret title.
Puppy spine
poem. That's how we'll think about it.
Okay.
That was interesting because like, yeah, I'm one of those people that likes the beginning of it.
Yeah.
And then it turns to hate once I'm trying to actually make it good, which is why I've got like about 200 things on my laptop, which none of them are finished because I'm like, because it's tainted by the fact that I've produced it, I end up hating it and I leave it alone for a year and then I come, well not a year, but about 6 months, I come back to it. Then because I have no memory of writing, it's like, it could be anything and it's like, I don't even remember it being there.
Okay.
So then it's kind of fresh enough for me to kind of do something. But I felt better because I watched this interview with Charlie Booker, who I love, maybe a little bit.
Great.
No, actually not too much because, you know, no, he's still cool though. And he actually leaves everything, or he says anyway, he leaves it all to the last minute because he's got all this stuff he wants to say, but he actually hates the process of writing it down.
Okay.
And that made me feel so much better because, like, I've got, you know, it's like I feel guilty that I'm supposed to want to write, but actually mostly hate doing it. That's,
okay.
That's a siren that they're coming to take me away.
Yes.
But yeah, another part of my guilt comes from I once saw Douglas Copeland talking. And he was talking about discipline,
mm-hmm.
and about it's not about enjoying it. It's about you have a routine where you write every day, or you know pretty much every day, and it's a job. You know you have to apply yourself. It's not about feeling inspired. It's about if you want to become a writer, you know, like how George Orwell would just kind of rewrite and do all this really meticulous stuff because he was kind of obsessive about technique and about all that kind of stuff. I'm not like that, and I have this constant guilt for it. But then yeah, you meet people that really do. Sit there and they'll, you know, do it to the end.
Yeah.
And I like those people, they inspire me. So it's good.
You've only got your head though, haven't you, and your way of approaching the world really, so.
Yeah, I don't like it. I find it quite restricting.
Oh.
It bothers me. But that's, you know, that's why I share other people's work with the world. because, you know, it's easier.
Yeah.
For now, until I'm going to wait until I'm 80 and then I'm going to do my masterpiece.
Okay, okay.
So it's all a matter of time.
Just make sure you don't die at like 79 and a half.
I think I'm going to die at about 40, so it's tricky. Anyway, okay. Digressing. I think it's time for another poem. I hope you brought another one. I say brought. It's all in his head. He's one of those guys. So that's how we can tell you've done it a lot, because, you know, it's there.
Well, I just quite like being able to look at the people I'm talking to.
Yeah.
And also because I like to change it. If I've done it once and kind of bits work or don't work, I always sort of record it on my phone and then see if there's bits which I can sort of, oh, that bit, you know, maybe I didn't make that bit clear, or that maybe that joke doesn't work, or maybe I'm saying this in four lines and I could say it in two. So that's partly why.
Yeah.
So I can watch them if I've learned it.
Do you make sure you learn them before you ever perform on for the first time? Do you like properly go over it again and again? Out loud, or
I don't learn them. I'm basically, well, I've been doing this not very long at all, so but still I'm a bit of a creature of habit, so I have developed a sort of a way I go about doing it, which is I tend to do them first at Poetry Unplugged at the Poetry Cafe on Tuesday nights, and it's maybe not learned by that point, but I'll have kind of rewritten it so many times and gone over it so many times and read it out to myself so many times that I'll know quite a lot of chunks of it. I just might not know the kind of the joins between sections or something like that, but hopefully I know the most of it. And so I'll do it then and kind of record it and then hack out the bits which I think are shit, and then kind of learn it, really. That's how I tend to go about it. But I say that, but I only know about 4.5 poems. So why I'm making a big theory about it, I don't know. But yeah, that's how I've gone about it.
I think it's good though. I'd love to be able to just have one little poem just that was in my head.
Yeah.
But what I like as well is when people who are like, I don't say people like you and like putting you in a little box there, but like they come on and if they don't do that kind of addressing you, they just go into it and you can't tell straight away whether they're just talking to you or if they're going straight. And I love that, because then very quickly you see that is the poem and they're just doing that very direct thing, and I like that.
But I've made a mistake doing that as well, because the first time I went to Poetry Cafe, well, the first time I was too late, I couldn't go on, unfortunately, but the next week I went along again, and I did this poem which was sort of about, like, I was sort of being in the poem, I was being the Archbishop of Canterbury, who's just retired, but he's really depressed because he can't forget about his job, because whenever he sees bread, he's reminded of communion, right? And so wherever he goes, there's bread everywhere. And for about the first, maybe, like, minute of this poem, I think everyone in there thought I was a really Christian person just trying to tell them all about God and why God is brilliant. And so then I realised you sometimes have to introduce it a little bit or sort of say, this isn't me, you know. But it's quite... Also, I did another one where I was like this kind of Cockney character who was like a bit of a chancer and a bit of a thief. But he's not a racist and he can't stand racism. It was when the BNP was standing in the elections and stuff. And the poem even ends with the character I'm being in the poem having sex with Nick Griffin's wife, because he hates Nick Griffin so much, and which I thought was sort of quite clearly didn't actually happen in real life. I've never had sex with Mrs. Griffin, but the next week I met this poet who's a really nice bloke, and he was telling me that I probably wouldn't like his poem that week because it's quite left wing, and he knew that I was a big conservative. And I kind of thought, oh no, like I'm not, and I never had sex with Nick Griffin's wife, so it's easy. I think people do assume that you're being yourself unless you make it clear that you're not.
Oh, wow.
You know?
Yeah, it's like you're in a soap, but they can't tell. I don't watch soaps, so I don't know why that analogy came. You know, how they chase you down the street because they think you killed somebody.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Interesting. So, are you going to... I'm not going to say, are you going to do another one? Just whenever you're ready.
I'm going to do another one. Okay. This is called Sad Stories. So, Jess is, like, telling me all this stuff about what her ex did, and I'm like, fuck off. Seriously, fuck off, Jess. We've all got sad stories. We've all had stuff go wrong. Stuff that ends too early. Stuff that lasts too long. Tonight the wine is flowing. This may as well be our song. So let's not tell sad stories tonight. Let's leave the stuff that's gone. Let's walk into the future. Talk into the future. Laugh and dance and fart and squawk into the future. With delivery, some kindly grey-haired storks in the future. Teaching the little one to walk in the future. Good boy, Mephistopheles. 1,000 champagne corks will make it in 1,000,000 New Yorks. Jess, you've got an amazing smile. I've got glasses to properly appreciate your amazing smile. Sadness doesn't suit us, so let's not tell sad stories tonight. Barman, two Sambucas. Tonight's a moment we can seize, to find the wood among the trees, fly to heaven on our knees, your bones, my body's skeleton keys. Then deep asleep as 100 logs, do asparagus wheeze in 100 bogs. There, right there on the stair, 100 mice in 200 clogs. You're kissing me, you don't need no frogs. So come here, right here, put your head to rest. Paint your mascara across my chest, cause there's no way a man could ever be blessed more than 5 minutes holding your hand, Jess. And she stares at me, my perfect prize. Summer, smiles and children swimming in her eyes. Her beer-soaked, tear-soaked, beautiful eyes, and she says, you had me at fuck off.
Another classic line at the end. I like that. You do read. I hope you read.
Yes.
I love the pause then. So are there any particular writers that you like in particular?
There are. I mean, most of the people I've sort of been... I guess I've been listening more than reading, because I've been listening to more sort of performance poets, I guess. I don't know what the word is, but people who do their stuff in microphones. Like Chris Redman, ventriloquist, I think is brilliant. Polar Bear is extraordinary, like his poem Jess, I think it's called Jessica or Jess. Oh my god, that's maybe where I nicked the name from. He's got a poem called Jessica.
I'm going to do an audit. I'm going to find out how many poems he's got about Jess.
Okay.
Maybe she's
a Yeah, girl. But I think she's called Jessica in his one, so he's clearly talented enough not to have to go for the easy rhyme. Kate Tempest is amazing. You know, I'm just saying all these kind of really big names, but I think they're big names because they're really good, you know. And Scroobius Pip. I also listen to quite a lot of sort of rappers as well, which I find really helpful for kind of the rhythm of it, I guess. And I used to play the drums when I was at school, because every specky 16-year-old boy needs to be in a Cure covers band. So I used to play the drums, and I think maybe that's why the rhythm is quite important to me as well. So maybe that's it. I don't know the names, but there's a book called Nil Nil by a writer who's really good. And
so what was the name of that guy again? Sorry.
We just had to look this up on the internet. It's a bit embarrassing. Don Patterson, which my friend Beth told me about. He has this book called Nil Nil, which is fantastic, because it is about sport and love and poetry. So
that sounds horrible. I'm biased. I can't. Sport.
And there's loads of because I'm just quite ignorant about poetry, so I sort of, you know, I feel embarrassed to go, I think Seamus Heaney is good, or I think, you know, because obviously everyone knows about, but I do think he's good.
It's not like an indie thing where you've got to be obscure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. this show that I did at Battersea last sort of October, I think it was. I then went on and did. There's a new festival called the Nursery Festival, which is, last year it was in some amazing sort of like workshop underneath the arches near kind of Southwark station. And they had a bunch of sort of theatre people and comedians and musicians and this amazing band called Bellatrix and the Boxettes and the impresarios, who are sort of just sort of really annoying because they're very funny without doing any preparation. Well, they probably prepare loads, but they just improvise brilliantly, and you sort of think, I spent ages writing my stuff and you're really funny. That's quite annoying. And then I did my Battersea show there, and then I'm doing a sort of a full kind of expanding it from like 15 minutes to kind of maybe like 50 minutes or an hour or something. So that, I'm absolutely shitting it about that, because I'm not an actor, and that's not a way to promote it, is it? Come see my show. I'm not an actor.
Come watch him squirm.
Yeah, exactly. And that festival, the Nursery Festival, is the 30th of September to the 16th of October. And I think it's like nurseryfestival.co.uk. And this isn't for me, but just a sort of a random plug, it'll be really good. My friend Lou Ramsden's play is on at Theatre 503. It opens, I think, on like the 20th of September. She's a really good writer.
What's it about? Say something tantalising.
It's called Breed, and I think it's... I don't know what it's about. If I try to describe it, I'll make it sound like some kind of Disney talking dog movie, but it definitely won't be that. It'll be a really good drama with some cracking jokes in it. And
there we go, sorted.
Yeah. Oh, and I also really recommend that kind of cheese that you can tear into strips. It's really addictive. It's like dairy crack. It's delicious. But a lot of people disagree with me on that. So
where did that come from?
It comes from Sainsbury's. It's, you know.
No, where did the thought come from?
Well, just you said, kind of, what do I recommend?
I thought we were just literally
stringy cheese
unplugging everything from your brain, and it's not cheese. It's probably not even food.
It's definitely sort of food.
I don't think
it tastes like food.
I know it's theoretically edible, but I don't think it's food.
So yes, thank you very much to Richard for coming in and putting up with, you know, stuff. If you're interested, he is going to be performing at the second Trashed Organ, which is on the 1st of September. And I believe he's also going to be joined by Katie Bonner and Ben Gilbert and John and Rob from our first podcast episode. I know it looks like there's some sort of scheme behind this, but I think it's just coincidence because, you know, I just have really good taste in poets. So yes, details will be, as always, on our Facebook page, so do have a look at that. And yeah, I know I've got some good lined up for next time, but I'm not going to tell you anything about it.